out his Hey, Tony, want to just, if you could, I don't want to disturb anybody else's learning. If it's not possible, it's not possible. But if it is possible, so let's go with that. Okay, let me tell you what we're going to do. Obviously, anytime you want to pick up and leave, you can pick up and leave. You don't have to stay. You're not a captive audience until lunch. But we'll have a two-part kind of staff training about something which I think is really, really critical for all of us at this stage in the summer. And we're going to do it in like I said, in two parts. The first part will be here in the Beis Medrash. It'll be more of a regular and traditional shiur that we'll be able to do. And the second part will go into some of the practical applications of essentially what is the same idea, at least the same idea of the last 5 or 6 minutes of what we'll get to now in this half hour. Try to move quickly through the shiur part because I think a lot of people will be holding in the general sugya and the general concepts, so we won't have to do that much background. I'll just point out a couple of things. The reason why we're doing it this way, I want everyone to be clear. If there's anybody at this point in the summer who still gains from any sort of model lesson like what we did in Connecticut or any other way to be able to give over to the Chaburas, that's great, wonderful if you do, but that's not my intention. First of all, it's late in the summer for that. Second of all, we don't necessarily have the time for that, and I'm not structuring it in that way. This is my talking directly to you with a different objective. It should be the case that the things that we speak about the most, whether it's in staff training or in a morning meeting or any other one-on-one conversation about the types of things that we're doing and the way we're doing it, they should have their sources in the Torah that we learn and in the Siddurim that we have during the day. I would love to see a time where either naturally or unnaturally we're linking more of the staff training to things that are going on in morning Seder. Whether or not that works as a model lesson for what any of us are doing in Chabur or in Shir, it should certainly work for our own lives and should certainly work as a side benefit for what we're doing. I think personally, I get a great deal of chizuk of the fact, and I think it's very cool that what we'll speak about during lunch has its roots in what we'll speak about before lunch, and that what we'll speak about in the Chadar Ochel, to put differently, has its roots in what we speak about in the Beis Medrash. That should always be the way it is with everything that we do. I think it is the way it is with most of the things that we do, but it should be the way in which we not just teach, but the way we live our lives in general. The level of disconnect between the learning that we do and the lives that we lead is not a particularly healthy thing. And when we have an opportunity to bring those things together in such a wonderful way, such a magnificent way, I don't mean that the Torah that we're going to learn is magnificent. Certainly none of the words that are my own are magnificent on any level. And none of the connections that we'll make and none of the applications that we'll do after lunch are that magnificent. But the very fact that there is a connection between anything we say, regardless of its quality, before lunch and anything we say during lunch, that really should be, that's the ultimate model lesson that I'm trying to bring across here. And that has everything to do with our own learning and our own interactions with Torah and our own interactions with poskim, our own interactions with halacha, as much as it has to do with the way we teach it or give it over. I think there's what that we can draw chizuk from that ourselves. So without with leaving that as the words of introduction, we will start right now. This year, not in an unusual way, there are many, many years like that. There are a number of calendar breakdowns that dictate not just the Atbash Gar formula of when certain days fall out, but there are certain, that many calendars that carry us through the entire year, tell us what the calendar is going to be, and they all have their own uniqueness, and they all have their own oddities. The calendar that we're in right now has, as a uniqueness, something we dealt with earlier in the year when we were at different parshios in May, the fact that Eretz Yisrael and America were different, and part of the reason why Eretz Yisrael were different was because of the coincidence of so many Yomim Tovim around weekends. We had many, many Yomim Tovim and many certain other days that are not necessarily Yomim Tovim or not Yomim Tovim yet that fell out around Shabbos or the next day as Yom Tov Sheni or like the rest. Most of the Yomim Tovim that we had this year were around Shabbos one way or another. One of the things that emerges from that is the dual phenomenon, and it always happens like this, not because of Atbash, it was a Nidchat, but it always happens like this. When one happens, the other is going to happen, is that we had Shavuos on Motzei Shabbos and we had Tisha B'Av on Motzei Shabbos. When Shavuos and Tisha B'Av on Motzei Shabbos happen, there is a phenomenon that everybody here is familiar with, that we spoke about or at least alluded to briefly in the announcements over the course of this this summer about what you're supposed to do exactly in that scenario. What are you allowed to do and not allowed to do on the Shabbos that precedes that particular Yom Tov? Of course, we know that you're not allowed to be mechin from Shabbos to Yom Tov. If you want to look at the source, it's fascinating that, like many other things that we accept and take for granted, the source for not being able to do hachana is not entirely clear. It's a machlokas rishonim, whether it's d'oraisa d'rabbanan. It's a machlokas rishonim about where it would come from if it is d'oraisa. And it's a machlokas rishonim about what the ideas about, even if it is a d'rabbanan. We are familiar with, and Rav joked last night that many of the high school guys and NCSYers cannot necessarily name the 39 malachos or even know that they're 39. Hachana is one that a lot of people are familiar with. Most people are aware of the fact that you're not allowed to be mechin from Yom Tov to Shabbos, or from Shabbos to Chol, or from Yom Tov to Chol. You're not allowed to actively prepare in any of those scenarios. We're not always 100% sure why, or we're not 100% sure where it comes from. There is no pasuk in Divrei Kabbalah, there is no pasuk in the Torah that says you're not allowed to be mechin. There is a drashas chazal that comes out of it, and it really emerges from a mishnah, which we probably won't get back to later, so if you want to turn to it quickly, you can. It's the only page of Gemara that you have over here. The mishnah in the 15th parak of Shabbos says, Mekaflin is a kelim afilu arba v'chamisha pamim, and then the mishnah says, Matzian es amitos milele Shabbos l'Shabbos, avalomi Shabbos l'motzai Shabbos. Halacha that would be near and dear to all of our moms about making one's bed. You're allowed to make your bed, and there are certain heterim for this, even in what the Mishnah describes, but you're allowed to make your bed on Friday night if there's a good chance you're going to sleep in it again on Shabbos, which we'll get to in a moment. But you're not allowed to make your bed on Shabbos for Motzai Shabbos. If the next time you're going to use the bed or anyone's going to use the room, you're not allowed to make your bed on Shabbos for Motzai Shabbos. The Mishnah says that. The Mishnah doesn't tell you where it gets it from, and that's where I said is the big machlokas rishonim about what that it is based on and where that comes from at all. There is a, again, just a, once we read the Mishnah about it, there is a famous, and this is something you could discuss with the Rav Aryeh Leibowitz or with Rav Rosner tonight, when they come, the myriad of halachos that pertain to hachana, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do on a normal Shabbos, what you're allowed to put away from Shalosh Shudas, which is directly relevant to this Mishnah, what you're allowed to do with your talis, which is a huge debate amongst modern poskim, and there are a lot of different opinions about that, whether you're allowed to fold your talis or not fold your talis after you finish davening Shabbos morning, and of course a number of other halachos that are directly related to this Mishnah. In terms of those kalim, and even according to some opinions that Shabbos, so there's no mitzvah, or it's not considered kavah Shabbos to have things be a mess. So generally thinking, I think the olam is quite mako when it comes to making a bed. Again, your moms will all be happy. Where olam is fairly mako when it comes to making a bed on Shabbos morning also, even if the next time you're going to sleep in it, even if you don't sleep on Shabbos, which like I said, we'll get back to in a minute, but the olam is mako about the fact that you're allowed to do it because you're not supposed to have on Shabbos, not considered covered Shabbos, to have a bed that's not made at all. Matzina Samita doesn't mean the same thing in the Mishnah that it means nowadays either. And there are a lot of dispensations in a Torah for that. But that's the general halacha. Those who believe it's d'oraisa believe it's d'oraisa from a pasuk in Bishalach that speaks about the preparations that went on Erev Shabbos towards the mud. Vehechinu es asher yaviu, the Torah says in Bishalach, that a person will be able to prepare, and that which you prepare you're going to eat, which is a klal gadol. When everyone speaks about hachana for Shabbos, there are two different things. There's the isser and then there's the mitzvah. The isser hachana on Shabbos is from Shabbos to Chol. There's an enormous, enormous inyan on Shabbos, of course, Kavod Shabbos and Erev Shabbos and the rest of it that goes on what we do beforehand. But there are those Rishonim who make a diach, the hechino is a share of view. The time for preparation is Erev Shabbos, and that is a klal gadol on that. And by contrast, that means, and this is not the strongest drasha that has ever been created, nor is it found in explicit terms in the Gemara all that much. The Rishonim derive it from certain other limudim that the Gemara has, but it's a drasha that says, Friday is when you're supposed to prepare, Shabbos is when you're not supposed to prepare. Most people generally assume that it's only a derabbanan that you have to deal with, but it's a derabbanan that the tzibor has taken up. All derabbanans are important, obviously. It's a derabbanan that, regardless of tzemach, people have taken seriously upon themselves. So therefore, you have this phenomenon that comes up every couple of years and comes up this year about what do you do on Shabbos that happens to be Erev Tisha B'Av, or in this case of this year, Tisha B'Av itself, or Shabbos that happens to be Erev Shavuos. Shavuos, you have an issue of sleeping. Tisha B'Av, you have an issue of sleeping, and you have an issue of drinking. Are you allowed to drink a lot, an excessive amount of water on Shabbos that is Erev Tisha B'Av, or is that considered to be a violation of Hachana? Are you allowed to sleep a lot on Erev Shavuos, knowing you're going to be up all night that Shabbos afternoon? Are you allowed to take a nap? Let's say a nap longer than you should. Most people would probably guess, if they're not familiar with the sugya completely, most people would probably guess and say, well, you can't be not allowed to nap. It's hard to have a halacha like that. There's never a time, and Rosh Hashanah is a minhag, never a time where you're not allowed to fall asleep. That's almost inhuman to be able to do. Why it's inhuman to do is a fascinating question. Why we have a Tanis Dibor that exists in our heritage, vision, certainly a tannis of eating. We don't have a tannis of sleeping. Okay, but let's assume it's an impossible thing to legislate because you never know when you're going to be tired. You never know when you're going to start nodding off or dozing off. But maybe, very well, there's a possibility that you're not allowed to sleep excessively. You're not allowed to sleep an extra amount or anything else like that. Okay, so that's the question. That comes up very often, and most people are familiar, as we'll see inside in a minute, with what the answer is supposed to be. We'll talk about that right now. We'll get to it right now. In Halacha Reish Sadi, the Shulchan Aruch writes as follows, and this is something which is going to be near and dear to our hearts. We're going to take two important detours in the next 17 minutes, both of which I think are really vitally important. Probably the second one more important than the first, but the Shulchan Aruch writes as follows: Yirbab bepeiros u'megidim u'minei reyach kedel hashlim minyan mea brachos. It's a very, very important and beautiful halacha to learn that a person should enjoy himself on Shabbos, and a person has an obligation to mea brachos on Shabbos. Mea brachos can be understood on a technical level. You have to make mea brachos. Rav Schechter spoke about this on Halachashir earlier this summer. And it can be understood on a more fundamental level, which is probably true, that it's the perfect day to make mea brachos. It's part of Oneg Shabbos also. It's not clear that there are two different motivations or one motivation, but the motivation is to make sure that you're doing a lot of things that necessitate brachos for one of those two reasons. Says the Ramah, and this is where it starts to become relevant to us, V'im ragil b'shenas tzarayim al yivan lanu. And if a person is used to sleeping on Shabbos, so the Ramah says it's no problem at all, he oneg hulo. It is considered to be a great level of oneg Shabbos. This is part one of the first detour that we're going to take. If you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, Sifkat and Gimel, so the Mishnah Berurah writes, al yivat lenu. The Mishnah Berurah says, not so fast. Mikomakam lo yavra yotzer midai. The Ramah was fairly unequivocal about the fact that sleep on Shabbos, if that's your oneg, is a good thing. And the Mishnah Berurah tries to rein on the parade a little bit and says there is a limit even to that. That's not considered to be. Whether you could do a lamda shechakira, whether that means it no longer is oneg if it's excessively, or even if it is oneg, it's not the right kind of oneg. I think there's a lot to wonder about on both the Ramah and the Mishnah Berurah. Shelo yivienu lidei bitul Torah. Shafilu tamud chacham shalom dem kol hashvua shemitvei shesangu biyoser ukdelakamei ba'aga ena per shivu kol hayom betanugim rak yimshichu yoser betanug mishar b'nei adam. Again, I think you could do an entire chabura and an entire week of chaburas just on the Mishnah Berurah's approach here to what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. But Shena b'Shabbos tanug is essentially the opinion of the Ramah. Sleep on Shabbos is a good thing for a person to revitalize themselves. The Mishnah Berurah could have disagreed with the Ramah. The Mishnah Berurah could have said, in our days, it's not such a good thing, or we don't trust people, or people are going to go crazy. The Mishnah Berurah preaches moderation. It is good, and it is good in moderation, and that's the way that I would personally interpret the Mishnah Berurah, although I acknowledge completely it's open to interpretation. What exactly is the Chafetz Chaim driving at when he puts this limitation on it? Does he really mean, the truth is, if you're a real Talmid Chacham, you shouldn't sleep at all? Does it mean that you should sleep just a little bit to be Yotzei the Tanug, almost like drinking on Purim or something? Drink what you have to drink to be Yotzei, and then move on to the things that really matter, like Talmud Torah. It's a fascinating, fascinating discussion. Clearly, the Mishnah Berurah wants to make sure that we do not get swallowed up by our Tanugim. We don't get completely overwhelmed by the Oneg Shabbos that we're pursuing or anything like that. And that's the Mishnah Berurah's position. Okay. But the Mishnah Berurah in Sifkat and Dalet says something else. Ki Oneg Kula. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Magen Avram. The Magen Avram is referred to the exact Makar in the Shaar Tzion. The Mishnah Berurah says as follows. Oneg kulo, so you're allowed to sleep on Shabbos afternoon. So here comes the makor from the Magen Avram. Here comes the makor for all of these shenanigans that take place on a Shabbos that also happens to be Erev something else. By the way, it doesn't have to be Erev something else. The same thing could apply if a person has a big test that they're studying for, or a major sports game, or anything else like that. It doesn't really make a difference in halakha whether it's for a davar shebe kedusha or not. But a person is motivated to sleep not because it's tanug, but because of a motivation that is going to impact the end of Shabbos. Says the Mishnah Berurah, quoting directly from the Magen Avram, Avalo Yomar, but he should not say Neilech v'nishon kedei shenuchal lasos melachteinu b'motzai Shabbos. Do not say, and it's interesting and fascinating, I once made a diuk on this Mishnah Berurah also for the point that I just made. We're going to have to leave that for a different day. But it's fascinating that the Mishnah Berurah does not use the more obvious example of the fact, and we'll see why in a minute perhaps, we will come back to it, but the Mishnah Berurah does not use the example of Shavuos or Tisha B'Av. He's not talking about sleep. So he's talking about sleep, so he wouldn't necessarily use the example of Tisha B'Av. Doesn't use the example of Shavuos. He says, don't say that I have a lot of work to do on Motzei Shabbos, and therefore I'm taking a nap. You're not allowed to say that. Shemara b'zeh, she'et noach yisham b'shvil yimos achal. Because in doing so, he is indicating that what he is doing on Shabbos is for Yemos HaChol. Now, if I stopped right here and asked everybody to interpret this Mishnah Berurah, leaving aside the diuk of milachtenu, as opposed to the examples that we started with, of drinking in order to be hydrated on Tisha B'Av, or sleeping in order to be well-rested for Shavuos night, leaving that aside, if I asked you to interpret this, I suspect the answers would be near unanimous about what's going on here. And you would be in good company with that unanimity. The unanimity would be, just the words that the Mishnah Berurah left out, the unanimity will be found on the other side of the page of the Mishnah Berurah, which is the Aruch HaShulchan. If you take a look in the same siman of the Aruch HaShulchan at the very end of Sif Aleph, so the Aruch HaShulchan writes the same thing. He says, V'im Rogel, this is four lines from the bottom of Sif Aleph, the complete lines, Im Rogel B'Shena Sarayim Al Yivat Lenu, if he normally sleeps a lot, word for word the same, he shouldn't stop. De'onekulo V'Shena B'Shabbos Tanu, so he adds to the Ramah the words that we added to the Ramah, we're in good company again, Shena B'Shabbos Tanu. And then he quotes the Magen Avraham, quoted by the Mishnah Berurah. The Aser Lomar Ishon Kedei La'asos Melacha Be'eref, Ba'afilu B'Chdei Lilmod Be'eref, he throws in the Shavuos case. Doesn't make a difference whether it's hammering a nail, whether it's driving a car, whether it's going to a ball game, or whether it's learning. Dizehu Kemechen Mishabbos L'chol. Because then you are going to run afoul of some serious problems of Achana. Dizehu, you might want to underline that line. Dizehu Kemechen Mishabbos L'chol. Rather, what you should do is sleep because you sleep on Shabbos. We just got finished saying there's a dispensation. Shabbos, Shena B'Shabbos Tanuk. That's why you're doing it. Don't ruin it. Don't make trouble of a situation that's not problematic. And don't say that I am going to sleep on Shabbos. Don't say those words because it's Shavuos tonight. Oh, I better get a good night's sleep. I better get a good rest right now because I'm going to be up all night tonight. Oh, the same exact thing would apply to the cup of water. Oh, I better take this water right now because I want to stay hydrated for tomorrow. I want to be able to do that. Why? So the Aruch HaShulchan is explicit, and this is going to be critically important in the next few minutes. The Aruch HaShulchan is explicit where the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah were not. This is a problem of Hachana on Shabbos. The Piskei Tshuva, which we'll see inside in a minute, the Piskei Tshuva points out that this is not remotely simple. He highlights a couple of reasons why it's not remotely simple, but these are certainly what we would call bomb kashas. If anybody's flying along here and wondering what they came here for and thinks this is all incredibly obvious and simple, so the Piskei Tshuva picks up the penalty flag and says, nothing here makes any sense. And he points out one reason. We will add a second reason why the position of the Aruch HaShulchan really does seem to be extraordinarily different. The reason why the Piskei Tshuva picks up on it and says it's extraordinarily difficult, the Piskei Tshuva says that is a fundamental understanding of what the Isser of Hachana is. There's a big question about what you do for after Shabbos that violates Hachana. Obviously, anything which constitutes a malacha or tircha yisera, that constitutes Hachana all the time. But the Piskei Tshuva quotes a variety of sources that are emphatic and clear about the fact that without any sort of tircha, and certainly with dibur ba'alma, it is near impossible to violate Hachana. And it could be, again, we'll get to it in a second, could be the Aruch HaShulchan meant, and I'll make that diag right now, ki mechen mishabbos l'chol, but even as a ki, the Piskei Tshuva doesn't like it. Even as a like Hachana, Piskei Tshuva is not at all convinced. It's not like Hachana, because Hachana by definition, by halachic definition, requires tircha. It almost certainly requires a maisa, and you cannot violate Hachana with dibor. You can violate a lot of things with dibor. We'll get to that in the Piskei Tshuva in a minute, but you cannot violate things with dibor at all. There is another problem with the position of the Aruch HaShulchan, one that we may not be able to answer and address at any point. The second problem with the words of the Aruch HaShulchan are the fact that it seems to skip a very obvious step. If it is true that I am not allowed to be Mechen from Shabbos to Chol, if there is such an Isser, the Oraisa or the Rabbanan, to do Hachana, and the problem is doing Hachana, then why does the Magen Avraham, and the way that the Aruch HaShulchan understands the Magen Avraham, why does the Magen Avraham jump to the fact that you can't say, you're not allowed to be Mechen from Shabbos to Chol? So if what I am doing, if I know and or the Ribono Shel Olam knows that the reason why I am drinking this cup of water, especially with the first question of the Piskei Tshuva, Piskei Tshuva already pointed out, if you really want to violate a chana, you better be doing something. So I am doing something. Going to sleep is not tircha yisera, but it's more of a maisa, it's more of an action than speaking is. Drinking a cup of water might be tircha yisera, the way that we drink on Erev Tisha B'Av. That really might be considered something which is an unusual and very, very strenuous action. But even if it's not tircha yisera, drinking this cup of water is worse, for sure, than anything else that I'm doing, than speaking, than dibur ba'alma. So if that's the case, why does the Aruch HaShulchan, why does he jump to, and the Magen Avraham, if the Aruch HaShulchan's interpretation is correct, why does the Magen Avraham say, why is it okay for me to take that nap if I know for certain what I am doing right now? I don't sleep on a Shabbos afternoon. That's not true about me personally. I'm giving an example. Person doesn't sleep at all Shabbos afternoon. And it is clear as day, forget about to the world, forget about some type of nikar or mara es atzmo in the lashon of the Aruch HaShulchan. But I know for a fact the reason why why isn't that right away a maisa hachana? Why does it make it, why are you skipping and jumping to, as long as you don't call it, it's okay? How does it become okay if I don't call it? The reason why I'm drinking this water, I don't drink 25 cups of water a day. I don't do that. The reason why I'm having my third bottle of Niviot is because of the fact that it's Tisha B'Av tonight. So why isn't that sufficient right there to be problematic? Why are we so quick to say you could do whatever you want as long as should have been, as long as you're not doing it as hachana for the next day? As long as you can somehow put it into normal behavior. I can't say it's usher to drink a cup of water, because normal people drink a cup of water. I can say it's usher to drink a lot of water. I can say it's usher for me to drink water if the purpose of my drinking water is solely because of anything else that I'm doing. And that's a second question. And the Piskei Tshuva doesn't ask that directly, but it's a second question to ask. The Piskei Tshuva disagrees with the Aruch HaShulchan. He reads the same Mishneh Berurah, he reads the same Magen Avraham, and he says it's not by accident that they didn't say anything about Hachana. It's not Hachana at all. He gives two possibilities, you had it in front of you, as to what it might be. The Piskei Tshuva says, and this will surprise absolutely nobody, if you look at, we could start from the beginning where he quotes the Mishneh Berurah, then he says on the top of the page, V'kavala Magen Avraham Lahevi Divrei Sifrei Chassidim Eilu V'ksara L'kamim V'hum Ibnei Shnei Tamei Ha'Isser Shavo. I really had the first part of the page, Amud Aleph, just so that you could see those words, those last four words, and get into the flow of the sentence. V'hum Ibnei Shnei Tamei Ha'Isser Shavo. The reason why you are not allowed to say, I'm going to drink a lot because tonight is Tisha B'Av, I'm going to sleep tonight because I'm going to sleep a lot this afternoon because tonight is Shavuos, or I'm going to sleep a lot this afternoon because I'm going to all-night New Year's Eve party, it doesn't make a difference. It's two reasons. The first is Dabar Davar. Again, anybody who's been paying attention at all certainly knew that that was coming. It's not called Hachan at all. There is something that's unique to Dibur. I'm not supposed to speak about melachos. I'm not supposed to speak about chol whenever I can avoid it. So the reference, and it's a little bit of a stretch for sure, but the reference of the work that I'm going to do in chol, and this is part of the diag also, it is fascinating that the Mishneh Berurah and the Magen Avraham, when they quote it, talk about la'asos melachtenu. It could be the problem is limited to that. It could be there really isn't that big a problem in saying something which would never qualify as davar davar. If I say I'm learning all night tonight, it's not clear that there would be Dabar Dover. It could be Dabar Dover because that learning is taking place on Yom Tov, which happens to be Motzei Shabbos. But that's a big, big chiddush that's not necessarily the intention of the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham may have meant that this prohibition is only for something which would qualify in the traditional way for Dabar Dover, which is the prohibition about speaking to something. As the Piskei Tshuva says, Sha'asur l'daber b'shabbos al inyonim shel yemos ha'chol, sha'asur la'asosam b'shabbos. And again, you could see in his Lashon even, there may be a massive, massive heter here that all of those games that we play on Erev Tisha B'Av and Erev Shavuos, we don't necessarily have to play. There's no problem with my talking about fasting. I don't know, I guess you could argue it would be a little bit closer. Staying up all night learning, I could talk about that all day and all night on Shabbos. I could make plans this Shabbos for all the things I'm going to do next Thursday night, and it's a very, very hard case to make to say that that would be Dabar Dover. So it could be Shavuos night. The next time somebody quotes you, you could refer to the Piskei Tshuva. The Aruch HaShulchan says straight out that it's Kemechen Lechol, and Mechen from Shabbos to Yom Tov is problematic, but the Piskei Tshuva in his first answer says, no, it's more likely to be Dabar Dover, and it's not clear that Dabar Dover would apply on Erev Shavuos. Not clear that it would apply to learning up all night. Maybe for fasting, although even that would be a stretch. Fasting is not a malacha on Shabbos. It's just something we don't do on Shabbos. We think you have to eat on Shabbos because of Oneg Shabbos. So that's a little bit of a chiddush din la halacha according to the first day in the Piskei Tshuva. The second day in the Piskei Tshuva is incredible. This is such a beautiful, beautiful line of Torah. It really, this is the second tangent, and I know we're running short of time, but it's totally worth it. It's such an incredible idea, and this is much less known. I mean, even if you're playing along at home and you're going to guess, Daber Daber, that was coming. So we have Hachana, that's the most obvious, what everybody thought 15 minutes ago. Daber Daber, once you knew there was something else, yeah, that kind of sounds right. As soon as you tell me I can't say something, there's a good chance it's going to tie into Daber Daber and the things I'm allowed to talk about on Shabbos and things I'm not allowed to talk about on Shabbos. Hold on to your chairs, listen to this. Beis says the Piskei Tshuva, Mishum Zilzol B'Kavod HaShabbos. Because ultimately what you're doing when you say that is Mizalzol B'Kavod HaShabbos. This is so incredible. Ki Hashena Hu Echad Mitanugei Shabbos. There's a really good reason to sleep on Shabbos. Because as the Ramah wrote, and as the Aruch HaShulchan quoted, Shena B'Shabbos Tanug. Because that's a way of Shabbos Tanug. V'ein lo lo mash'osa zolzat sarach yamos hachol. Don't defile the thing that you're doing and strip it of its most important meaning. You are not sleeping because of Motzei Shabbos, you're sleeping because of Shabbos, because that's Tanug on Shabbos. You're taking something which has inherent value, and that's the Zilzul that the Piskei Tshuva is referring to. Taking something that has inherent value and stripping it of that inherent value is incredibly, incredibly problematic. Kipo Geyab is there, because of Shabbos. I'll just quickly give you, I give these examples whenever I can. They're so important. The first Ha'ara that Rav Tursky made, and after every summer, he tries to give Ha'aras, and often he doesn't have any, you know, for whatever reason. But a lot of times that the first Ha'ara he ever gave was that we used to have basically the last night shtick every Friday night on our In Shabbosin. Maybe not on Shabbos Chazon, maybe not on the first Shabbos, people don't know each other, but we had performances and impersonations and, you know, all the rest of the stuff like that. So Rav Tursky came, it was back in the days of Efrat, Rav Tursky, the first summer that he was there, at the end of the summer, giving his Ha'aras, he said, Friday nights are terrible. The Oneg, the Tish, it's terrible. Why is it terrible? Rabbi, no one was talking about it. They were great. Everybody got into it. They were standing on chairs. Rabbi Kamenetsky was still doing his thing back then. Everything was great. He said, no, I don't like any of that shtick there. So immediately I thought he meant, like many Purim spiels and the like, oh, did we go overboard? Did we impersonate a Rosh Yeshiva? Did we say something or do something in the wrong way? So he said, no, none of that is the problem. That's not the issue at all. In Oneg, literally, those words are what he used. A tish in Oneg Shabbos has such inherent kedusha. Do the shtick a different time. You can't strip of something of value and treat it doesn't have value. And that's a point I made on Shabbos Chazon also, which is straight up Rav Tursky's alley also. You have to be so careful with Zemiros. You want to get people on a chair with a 99.99, and I don't want to harp on that point, but it's an important point. If you want to get people on a chair and get them going, it's fine. You just can't call it Zemiros. And you can't do it at the same time as Zemiros. If Zemiros is that, then you're depriving Zmiros of what they really are. That's called Zilzal Shabbos. It's an unbelievable mucker that Piskei Tshuva has. You can't take something, even Shena, that has inherent value in Shabbos for what it could be and the Kedusha that it can be, and by the words that we're using, strip it of that very Kedusha. You're not allowed to do it. If you take a look at I'll give you the other examples a different time if you remind me. But there are other examples of this phenomenon also. I'll give you very quickly. I tell some of the Rashi guys, no, we'll know it also all the time. I always say that that's the biggest challenge for all of us, the Avodah of Purim in particular. Avodah of Purim, there are two problems. If you want Purim to be, and I say the same thing about New Year's Eve also, by the way, in the contrast between New Year's and Rosh Hashanah, and the Kedusha of passing in time. The moment in which you flip a calendar, the moment that you go 3-2-1 is a moment of inherent Kedusha. It's a moment of inherent value. So New Year's Eve parties are not just hololess and disastrous, but they're also a zilzul of Kedusha. I tell people all the time, if you want to have a New Year's party, and that's where you're holding less, have a New Year's party, but have it on December 29th. Have it on January 1st at night. Not at that moment when you flip a calendar, because that's a moment of Kedusha. That's a moment, Vesikin, is when you turn the clock, you turn the page, night becomes day, day becomes night. Even on the secular calendar, we can say that it has Kedusha like that. And Purim, unfortunately, is the exact same thing. If you need and are desperate for that point in your life to have a costume party or to have complete holiness or drunkenness or craziness devoid of Kedusha, just recognize that it's a double-edged sword. That's bad in its own right, but it's magnified 10 times more when you take something of Kedusha and say, this is not Kadosh. This is not what it's supposed to be. When you actively strip something, that's the zilzul that the Piskei Tshuva. It's an amazing, amazing makor. That's why you're not allowed to do it. I can't. This cup of water right now on Shabbos afternoon, it has Kedusha because it's part of my own Shabbos. I can use it in a way. And as soon as I say the words, I'm using it for Motzei Shabbos, so I've stripped it of its Kedusha. It's an amazing, amazing makor that Piskei Tshuva has, and worth the price of admission right there. If you take a look straight out in the footnote 20, it's cut off, but before the 21, he says in the third line, the last word, Eina Israel Mishum Vidaber Dover, Velo Mishum Hachana Mishabbos Lachol. Just in case you missed my point, says the Piskei Tshuva, and you thought I was playing nice, there's a real machlokas here. There's a real argument here. This is straightforward. This is straight out because of Dabar Dover. He doesn't quote his second beautiful explanation, but he does quote Velo Mishum Hachana Mishabbos Lachol. Vitzarechi and Al Arach Shochan. I don't get the Arach HaShulchan. I don't know why the Arach HaShulchan thinks that it is Hachana at all. See if Aleph Shekosef Sheisur Mishum Shumechen Mishabbos Lachol. I know our timing is a little bit messed up, but I want to introduce the second part of what we're discussing by just trying to give the Piskei Tshuva. It's quite compelling on a lot of levels, and the questions that the Piskei Tshuva asks on the Arach HaShulchan, I think there are strong questions, but I think we can make an attempt to answer some of them for the Arach HaShulchan. Why does the Arach HaShulchan think that this could possibly be Hachana? And remember our second question also. If it is Hachana, it's Hachana. What difference does it make what you say? So there's the money ball. As soon as we formulate the question that way, what difference does it make what you say? I think we may know the answer a little bit. The world that we live in, even the halakhic world, with its very strict hagdaros, and its very, very strict classifications, which is what a hagdara is, its very strict classifications of anything and everything, but it's still, at the end of the day, even the incredible precise world of halakha that we live in, at the end of the day, it's not as black and white as we always think it is. Things are nimshach acharei diburim. What we have when we have sleep on Shabbos, or this cup of water, even with its inherent kedusha, is at the end of this something which is gray at best. When I say that I'm doing something, I am defining and creating a reality, a halakhic reality that's different than it was before. I believe that that is what the Arach HaShulchan means. Remember, we asked the question, and maybe some of you even guessed the answer based on the way we formulated that question. What difference does it make what I say if I'm being mechin for Shabbos by taking that nap, mechin for chol by taking that nap? Then I'm being mechin for chol. Who cares what I say? And the answer is everybody cares what I say. Because there's no such thing, if I am, I am, and if I'm not, I'm not. The world that we live in, and we'll speak over lunch about the other applications of this, but even the halakhic world that we live in, is filled with areas of gray where my dibur can define the things that I'm doing. The speech that I use, the language that I use, the labels that I use, the way in which I describe things is not just a description, but a definition. It creates a certain metzias. Had conversation with a number of Talmidei Chachamim and other people that I greatly respect for their breadth of knowledge, to find other examples of this phenomenon. And of course it exists, haflaz about speech and nedarim in the world. The nedarim might be an example, and there might be a couple of others that are there, but none that are quite as clear as what the Arach HaShulchan seems to present here. The Arach HaShulchan, almost by definition, is saying, look, until you say what you're doing, you're not necessarily doing it. Until you define what you're doing with your dibur, the action can remain gray. And that grayness is going to make it mutter. That grayness is going to make it permissible. The very fact that I have not defined what I'm doing through my dibur means that there's still wiggle room. In this case, the wiggle room will be tzad heter. The tzad heter is going to be saying that it's not necessarily achana. Who's to say that what I'm doing is being mechin for Shabbos? Maybe what I'm doing is taking a nap. It's my 18th bottle of water, and I don't usually drink 18, but maybe I'm just very thirsty. Who's to say that I'm very thirsty? I remember having a conversation once with a guy in the bus into Breuer's in the third grade. He was a very, very smart guy, intellectual. Now he's speaking about copyright law. Weird thing to have a conversation on the bus. But it's interesting because there was a huge taxi company in the days of yellow cabs in Fort Lee, New Jersey, right by the bridge, called Babe's Taxi, because of its proximity to Yankee Stadium. Babe's Taxi with a big, big baseball logo. And he was explaining why that's not copyright infringement. Because even though everybody knows what's going on there, I remember saying, my name is Babe, or I always liked the name Babe, and maybe I really like baseball. You have to be very... Copyright law is a real thing. Notice it has to be really, really bold. My 18th cup of water, not so bold. But when I say the words, I'm defining the things that I'm doing. I create a new metzias by the words that I use. And whereas the Piskei Tshuva doesn't like that idea, the Piskei Tshuva says there's no way you're ever going to get to it. By the way, it's the same thing about Dibor not being enough of a Maisa. Yeah, but Dibor, when connected with a Maisa, may very well be enough. The Hachana in Shabbos is with the going to sleep. The Hachana for Chol, excuse me, is when I go to sleep. The Hachana for Chol is when I am drinking the water. That's the Maisa. But the Maisa is gray. the mice is undefined. Until the Dibur does its job to define the Metzias, to create the Metzias, there's nothing to see here. There's nothing going on here. And again, the Piskei Tshuva has its own idea and its own lessons to be learned from it about the Zilzul of Shabbos, and that's fascinating and beautiful. But the Aruch HaShulchan seems to be of the opinion, unless you really want to hang your hat on the Kid Mechin Lechol and think that the Aruch HaShulchan never meant it either, and you're so convinced by everything the Piskei Tshuva says and think that's the only thing ever going on, and anybody who's ever told you since the third grade that you're not allowed to say it because the Achana doesn't know what they're talking about, those who believe, like it seems to be the Aruch HaShulchan believes, that it's actual Achana, I think it's because of the fascinating relationship that we'll speak about more in 10 minutes from now, but the fascinating relationship that exists between Dibur and Maisa, between the words that we use and the actions and the metzias that is created by the words that we use. That seems to be the shita of the Aruch HaShulchan. That seems to be his approach as to why he calls this hachana, even though he knows what the Piskei Tshuva says, that it could be hachana in theory without it, and that Dibur alone is never hachana in the problematic of your doing. But I think the answer to what he's describing and what the Aruch HaShulchan means, it has to do with this relationship and the koach adibur to define a metzias and to define an action in a certain way. Okay, so I want you to go get lunch and we'll resume in 7-8 minutes with the staff training part of it. Gaia, thank you for listening.
I don't want to like say this definitively without going through it again, but when Rudy was saying one of the